Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings to all of you from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Glad to be back with you once again. Tonight, we go in search of mysteries, the pursuit of the unknown, with two men who've spent much of their lives crisscrossing the globe to check things out for themselves. They are very different people with very different interests, but they share some things in common. Both have curious natures. They both have been able to straddle that invisible line between healthy skepticism and keeping an open mind. They do not suffer fools, but some of the things they have seen are pretty hard to explain in prosaic terms. Coming up in this hour, just a couple of minutes, in fact, Dr. John Alexander. Many of you will remember him for his UFO work. He's generally open-minded on that subject, but is not shy about calling out people he regards as fraudsters or fakes or liars, which drives some of his critics crazy. I think the last time he was here, we talked about his most recent book, UFOs, Myths, Conspiracies, and Realities, which got a lot of people in the UFO field riled up, to John's utter delight, I suspect. But he's joining us tonight to speak about the pursuit of other exotic phenomena, as exhibited by the voodoo priests of Africa and the shamans of Mongolia. John and his wife Victoria just back from a long, arduous trip to those two parts of the world. I got a few messages from them along the way. Whenever they go into a town, they could send an email or something telling me they had seen some jaw-dropping stuff and had some mind-bending encounters with voodoo priests and with practitioners in two African countries, the so-called cradle of voodoo, and also some otherworldly type experiences with the reindeer shamans of Mongolia. Quite a trip, and I think the Coast audience will get a kick out of this. That includes the skeptics out there. Then in the second half of the program, I am joined by the loquacious, energetic Bill Burns, who I think has more irons in the fire than anyone I know. He's an author, publisher, TV host. I think he's an attorney, too. He was with me earlier this year to chat about a book he wrote about the secret life of John Kennedy and this drug doctor who allegedly kept JFK pumped up. This time, Bill Burns takes us on a trip around the world, recalling the highlights of his time with the TV series UFO Hunters, which I think is fair to say it was sort of a forerunner of a broadcasting explosion of these reality-based shows that delve into the paranormal, kind of the precursor to all manner of ghost hunter shows and Bigfoot hunter shows and monster hunter shows and on and on. Bill is out with a new book about the TV show, how they got it on the air, the adventures and misadventures they had in trying to run to ground some of the best known and most important UFO stories and cases around the world. If you are a fan of that show, I think you'll get a kick out of the behind-the-scenes stories, and we will cover a bunch of them tonight. That's coming up in hours 3 and 4. Webmaster Tim Benall and I have put together our usual list of oddities and worthy items from the recent world of news, stories that I thought might be of interest to you. One item that will relate to a Bill Burns UFO investigation is speculation about what's underway these days out at the infamous Area 51 military base here in my home state of Nevada. An invisible plane, for instance, not invisible to radar, but actually invisible. Hope Wonder Woman doesn't sue for a patent infringement on that one. Among John Alexander's many pursuits over the years are certain stories about weird creatures, unidentified animals, some in connection with the Bigelow Ranch, a.k.a. Skinwalker Ranch in Utah. We have a related story posted in our Knapp's news section tonight, new sightings of what's been called the Michigan Dog Man. These are humanoid figures, but with a dog's head and face. Similar creatures were seen not only in Utah, but all over the country. The story from a Michigan newspaper, kind of a fun read. And how's this for a scientific advance? We've posted a story about how scientists managed to freeze light, freeze a beam of light, to actually stop it in its tracks for about a minute, which some of you might recall is pretty similar to something that Bob Lazar said he saw out in the Nevada desert almost 25 years ago. Finally, looks like we've figured out how that stuff works. Those stories and more posted in the NAPS news section on the Coast to Coast website, so check them out when you get a moment. A quick hello to all the folks who might be listening from the 12th annual Mothman Festival underway this weekend in West Virginia, downtown Point Pleasant, where the Mothman legend gained so much notoriety. Also, greetings to those folks on AboveTopSecret.com. They invited me to participate in one of their Ask Me Anything exchanges this week. I got to as many questions as I could during the work week, but I'm promising to return and answer a few more over the next couple of days, time allowing. Time now for our first break. When we come back, Dr. John Alexander here to talk about mystical encounters in Africa and Asia. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for being with us tonight, everyone. I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast AM. What do you know about voodoo? Chances are your knowledge of that religion is based on impressions you've received from Hollywood movies. The Rainbow and the Serpent comes to mind. Remember that one? Scared the heck out of people, that scene where they bury the guy. Voodoo, contrary to some assumptions, did not originate in Haiti. It came over to the New World on slave ships from Africa, where in some countries it is still the dominant religion. And it is a religion that's not quite what Hollywood has made it out to be. Joining me tonight to talk about his interactions with African voodoo priests is a guy, a name known to Coast listeners, Dr. John Alexander, author, non-lethal weapons expert, former Army intelligence officer, and world traveler, just back from an arduous journey to Africa and Asia with his wife, Victoria. John, always good to have you on the program.
Great to be here, George.
Let's start with this. I know you like to tweak the noses of critics. You like to encourage this man in black kind of mystique. How is it that you're able to make these trips? You're not doing work for the New World Order or the secret government, are you?
Definitely not. The way we do it is generally fund them ourselves, and sometimes with small groups. So Mongolia was just the two of us with the guides that took us to these remote areas.
You travel a lot, though.
We do. We do. We're very interested. A lot of that's thanks to Victoria and her interest. We have met shamans all over the world. You may remember being on when we talked about ayahuasca and experiences in South America. And these are in addition to those.
I know that looking at these pictures of the most recent trips you took, and this was a long one, I don't know, was Mongolia then Africa, or Africa
That's
then
correct.
Mongolia?
We did 3 weeks on each with about a week apart.
Jeez. And did you come home in between?
Yes, but we were down for about 1 week. Of course, the climates were very different. We were in northern Mongolia, as close to Russia as you can get. We're only a few kilometers from the Russian border, and you're above the 50th parallel there, so it's really quite chilly. We were camping, so, you know, sleeping bags at night, and cold in the daytime, crossing glaciers and things like that. And then Africa, of course, was the other end of the spectrum.
Well, I didn't want to dwell on that kind of stuff too much, but I want to give people a picture that you're kind of a boots-on-the-ground traveler. You're not staying in five-star hotels all the time. I can tell from these photos that you're traveling with pack horses. You're staying in tents and sleeping on the ground and really interacting with the locals in both of those places, both of those continents.
Yeah, they were pretty, no five-star hotels anywhere along the line.
Let's start with Africa, the voodoo stuff. I don't know, how much did you know about voodoo before you went over? Did you give yourself a crash course? And what can you tell us about our perceptions and general misperceptions about voodoo?
Well, almost coincidentally, but many, many years ago, as a freshman in college, the first term paper I ever did was on voodoo. But that was based on Haitian work, and so I had some background, and I followed it to a degree, but never had the depth of understanding that we had going to, we were in Togo and Benin. Now, Benin didn't used to exist. The area was known as Dahomey, the Dahomeyan Empire. That is where all the slaves came from, as we saw. We were in Ouida, which is one of the big slave export sites. So it's very, very interesting. And note to you, one of the things I said is it's not just a religion. They tend to think of it as such. For those folks, to this day, it is a way of life.
Well, I was reading about it, and they call it, at least online, some of the resources about it say that it is central to moral and social order in these countries and in these little towns out there where government probably has a hard time reaching.
Yeah, this area, Togo and Benin, are some of the poorest areas in the world. As you know, we've been to lots of poor areas, and these are right at the bottom of the list. Not a lot of government resources available. And one of the things that's very interesting is how you see the religions integrating, particularly Christianity and Voodoo, and that's more to the southern part of the countries. In the north, and somewhat problematically, is the integration of Islam and Voodoo, which doesn't work nearly as well.
So Christianity and Voodoo not necessarily at odds. They can coexist.
Correct. And you'll see many of the same thing. Lots of smudging going on, like you see the smoking in Christian churches. Widow Dambala, one of the main gods, for instance, is probably along the lines of Saint Peter. Many of the people we had, for instance, our main guide is actually a member of Jehovah's Witness, and yet totally integrates that into the animist voodoo ceremonies.
And what is the belief? I mean, they believe in God, they believe in spirits. What is it they believe?
They believe in spirits, and spirits in everything. One of the things he pointed out, because we did a lot of trekking around the forest there, and for instance, before they go to pick something, they ask permission from the spirits of the trees, the plants that are out there, rocks. They see spirits in everything.
Well, I can see us going, ha ha, that's very funny and kind of quaint and parochial, and how rural to ask the tree if it's okay to pick some leaves or something. But these folks take it very seriously.
Very seriously.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. It's just, as I say, it's integral to their life. And we'll probably get into some of the ceremonies that we saw, but particularly the fire ceremonies, because in what we know of physics and that, the things we saw just can't happen, but they did.
Well, we'll definitely get into the ceremonies, because the stories you've told me in anticipation of this discussion have been pretty amazing, so I can't wait to hear more about them. Let's talk for a couple of minutes, though, about misperceptions about voodoo. And I'm not trying to paint it with some, you know, that it's we're supposed to believe it wholeheartedly and it's a wonderful religion. I'm not casting judgment either way. But what we know about it from movies is pretty scary. I mean,
right.
We know that there's little dolls and you stick pins in them and put curses on people. And that's pretty much the extent of the knowledge I think most of us have about voodoo.
Unfortunately, that what you've said is a very accurate depiction of what Hollywood has painted for us. The reality is, as I said, a way of life. They go to voodoo priests for basically everything. Most of it's for help and a very positive outcomes in their life, for curing diseases. Remember, medical assistance in this area of the world is, approaches nil. And so they practice these things in just everything that they do, from providing food to they go for advice and counseling, much as, Christians may go or Jews may go and see their leadership and ask, what the moral compass is. The voodoo priests provide the same kind of guidance for their flocks as well.
I can see a lot of potential for exploitation and trouble there. If you're going to a guy, the voodoo priest, with your health problems, and he's going to rely on spirits to come and cure you for a serious health issue, I'm guessing that doesn't always work.
That's true, but I just forwarded an article to some folks that the third leading cause of death in the United States is medical problem or medical malpractice leading cause.
So we both got it. But I mean, have you seen, for example, evidence that these voodoo priests, just in the area of medical care, that they're doing some of what they're doing is good, that it works?
Oh, absolutely. And I would say most of what they do is for positive things. Again, the resources are very limited. They rely very heavily on the dream state. We talked to one major healer there, and what he would do is people come to him from, in that case, long distance away. Sometimes foreigners come in. He has them stay, and he sleeps on it. He says in his dreams, the spirits come and talk to him and tell them what needs to be done to cure. And obviously it does work at least some of the time. But, of course, placebos work as well.
Right. That's what I was going to ask. Is it psychosomatic, or are these voodoo priests using herbs or plants that, yes, that have some kind of therapeutic value, or what is it?
Yeah. No, a lot of it is just that. Now, one of the problems is that there are many, many tribes. There's probably 1,000 languages in Africa. And one of the problems that we had going out, our guide spoke fluent English. French is the normal language. But these various tribes had different languages, and very frequently we had to have double translation because even the guide couldn't understand what they're saying. And this can vary over a very small distance. I mean, yeah, you may go 10, 15 miles away and encounter another tribe that has a different dialect and can't even communicate effectively with the people that are very close to them.
I don't want to make this too much of a travel log, and we'll get back to voodoo in a second, but it's just looking at some of these villages and the pictures you sent me, it looks poor and dangerous. I mean, you know, we all see the stories on the news about warlords in Africa and chaos and poverty, and it just seems to me like it's not travel for the timid.
I would tend to agree with that, although I never felt really in danger. We did get very close to the Nigerian border at one point. Now, Nigeria is rated at about a 5 level in intensity, about as dangerous as you can get, but that's mostly because of Boko Haram and the Christian Islam issues that are going on in northern Nigeria. Poverty is something because, you know, poor people don't cause crime, but they certainly are affected by it. So you do want to wash your belongings, but I never felt any physical threat.
And how far back does voodoo go for the Africans? I know I read that it's the cradle of voodoo. I think you described that Togo and Benin, cradle of voodoo where it began. But how far back? Does it predate Christianity, or is it comparable in how far back it goes?
To be honest, I'm not sure. It's hundreds of in years, and like Christianity, if not thousands, they have grown up. I've been in other areas such as Mali and Ghana, and it certainly goes back about as long as civilization has been there.
I know in the pictures, too, I saw that it seems like voodoo paraphernalia is everywhere. You come to a tree and there's a bunch of bones and shells and string on it. And then there you go to a house and there's something over the front door. And talk about, and then there's a voodoo marketplace where they sell all kinds of stuff. Tell me about that part of it.
Well, that was in Lomé, which is the capital of Togo. And we went to what they call the fetish market. And again, the fetishes can be a whole range of things, lots of dead animals, animal parts, but also some of the dolls and gourds and just about everything you can imagine. And then what they do is they take those items and then the priest puts the intention into it, i.e., you know, to help you or to curse somebody or to bless them. So a lot of it has to do with the actions of the priest that puts the intentionality into the item. But almost anything. As you mentioned, the trees, there's lots of, quote, sacred trees, and you see many with white banners on them. Almost every home has some kind of marking over the doors, and that's to ward off evil spirits. and including illness. Illness is seen frequently as an evil spirit and can be warded away.
John, I'm going to interrupt you there. We'll pick up the story when we come back. We'll get into some of the amazing sort of demonstrations of voodoo's power that you saw. We'll be back with more Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with John Alexander about his exploration into the unknown, specifically into voodoo and the shamans of Mongolia, as well as the voodoo priests of Africa. When we come back, some of the experiments and ceremonies that he saw that convinced him that this stuff has some power, some mojo. Stay with us. Much more to come on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. John Alexander, I know you as kind of a skeptical guy, a man of science, and you have rigorous standards. And so I'm trying to reconcile the image of the guy I know with the fellow who's telling me that there's something to voodoo. So tell me this, going over there, did you have an idea in your mind that there was something to it, or did you not know enough to have an opinion either way, or what?
Well, I think in both trips, we knew there was something to it. Now, you can argue what that is. But some of the things that we saw there, I'd heard about them, but never had personal experience with it before. So that was the big difference. And certainly what we saw with the fire dance and whatnot was quite different from what I actually expected. By the way, I also mentioned, you've mentioned several times the pictures, and from the Coast to Coast website, if they click, they can actually go to the website and see many of these for themselves. It's on the lower part of my first page.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, the question that I'm sure is occurring to people as you're mentioning the fetishes, these animal parts that are for sale in the marketplace, the skeleton of a hippo's head, or the, you know, different birds or snakes or things of that sort. And then you mentioned about dolls. And when we associate dolls with voodoo, we think of evil. I mean, sticking pins in it. I could see people saying, all right, if you're messing with this kind of stuff, you're inviting spirits into your life. You're messing with trouble. You're inviting in trouble and evil.
There are those who say that. Now, I've not had any problem with it. Probably more when we were in Brazil and went to Umbanda ceremonies. You know, Victoria actually got possessed doing that, and that one's probably a little more problematic, if you will, or, you know, potentially of concern. I go to these as an observer. And Victoria actually tends to get much more actively involved in the services themselves.
Well, I mean, there are substances that go along with some of the shaman that we've talked about before, ayahuasca, for example. You don't take that stuff, but as an observer, you see what happens to people who do. And does the same thing apply here to voodoo, that there is something genuine going on, a physical manifestation?
Yeah, I think so. And remember, most of what they do, even using the fetishes and all that, are done for positive outcomes, to prevent illness, to cure illness, to help with the relationships, much like going to soothsayers. Here we have people, you know, I want money, happiness, and those sorts of things. And the vast majority of the voodoo ceremonies are based on, you know, positive outcomes for the community.
All right, let's go to some of the ceremonies you saw. Walk us through a few of them.
Well, the ones that you'll see there that most impressed me, I think, was the fire ones. I just saw that. I've done fire walking. A lot of people probably have done that. And, you know, put the coals out and you get across it, you know, relatively quickly. What we saw here was amazing. People taking and just holding fire under their arms, on their arms. Some of the most amazing stuff was they would pick up burning logs and just put it in their mouth. And I've got video of guys just biting off this burning chunk of coal, holding it in his mouth for like over a minute. Without spitting it out or anything of that nature. And I don't think there's any, you know, magic potions that they put on that prevent them from getting burned. It's interesting because not all of the people do it. We ought to emphasize that, that the folks who are involved have to go through a lengthy training process and be initiated. But we did see one of the things that impressed me was there were two young boys, probably 10 or 11, came out, and they too were doing it. And the main priest walked over and took his elbow and kind of touched him on the top of the head, and that was referred to us as being, you know, transferring the power or the protection. And then they were able to do the same sorts of things as holding the burning thing on their skin for extended periods of time, stand in the fire, sit in the fire with no apparent adverse effects whatsoever.
The firewalk thing. Now, we've all seen that even in movies, and people do it at corporate events, the sort of the power of positive thinking kind of a thing. That really quick, brisk walk across some hot
right.
coals, that's not what you saw.
Well, that's correct. Having done that, and I know what the scientific responses are, I'm not sure I agree with it, but, you know, they come up with alternative explanations. None of them would be able to accommodate, you know, the things that we saw here and the length of time and direct contact. And it was definitely hot. I mean, some of this we saw, we're talking distances of inches away from us or a couple of feet.
So it's not sleight of hand then. Somebody isn't just pulling a fast one on you.
Oh, no, it is not. And I actually asked the guide if we could go out, you know, having done this and knowing something about the states. And they wouldn't even let us get close enough to try and pick up the coals or anything.
What is the point of putting a coal in your mouth and leaving it there for a minute? As a demonstration of the power of this thing?
Correct. They had a long mythology behind this as to why and the how. What they claimed was that somewhere back in antiquity, there were lots of wars that go on, and certainly we mentioned the slave trade, and that ended up, we had armies, you know, capturing people to be shipped off to predominantly Brazil. But in one of those, this particular village that we were in, or that clan, had been attacked. Most of them were killed, and many of them were burned to death, put in their huts and burned alive. And so what they said was that they made an agreement, this gets back to spirits, an agreement with a fire spirit, that if they did certain things and honored the fire spirit, the spirit would protect them. And again, they go through this long process of indoctrination and initiation before they are able to, you know, perform these things.
Do you happen to know what the initiation ceremony is?
Do not. And these are secret societies. Even among them, it was interesting. One of the things that came up is that the information is always passed through the male lineage. And the rationale for that, we were told, was that if the females learn how to do it, they may end up marrying somebody from another clan. And these secrets are held very tightly within very small groups.
And does it go father to son, or does it go the priest pick somebody, whoever?
Not necessarily. It's more the priest. And one of the things we found was that even who is being trained is kept secret. There's usually a head priest who is known, and his acolytes may not be known to the village until near his death when he says, "And here is my successor."
These demonstrations that you saw, were they done for your benefit? Are the people in these villages putting on these shows for the benefit of tourists and visitors as a way to make a living, or do they do them all the time on their own?
Yeah, there were 16 of us. There were hundreds of them. So mostly it was done, you know, for the locals. They're only done at certain times. They said that the fire ceremonies that we talked about are done at the beginning and the end of the rainy season and on the full moon. So it was time so that we were there for that. There were no other foreigners that were in the area at all.
So they're doing the ceremony at the end of the rainy season or and beginning and end, but I mean, is it to affect the weather or just as
Oh,
a way
yes.
of
I mean,
marking the
that's
season?
one of the things. Remember, they live and die based on crops. And one of the major problems in the area with climate change, which is in fact real, has been affecting their crops. Rain has been way under the norm for quite a while. So it is to invoke the spirits, in this case, to help crops grow. Not unlike the rain dances and things that have been done here in the U.S. and other places around the world.
So a guy puts a burning hot coal in his mouth and leaves it there for a minute, or the young guys put these burning sticks on their arms. Are there wounds,
No,
scars, burns?
not in the slightest. And they came up and we could touch the skin, and you know, it was cool and clearly not damaged at all. We'll get together. I'll show you the video, which is more impressive than the stills that are on the website, but it's just amazing.
So help me with that, John. You're a science guy. What would be the scientific explanation for that, or is there one?
Well, I'm not sure. A friend of mine used to say anything that does happen can happen. And this seems to be kind of in that. It certainly does happen. I can't come up with any quick rational explanations. You know, one of the ones for firewalking is something called Leidenfrost, which means that there's small water bubbles that form a insulation between the skin and the fire. Given the length of time that these have direct contact with quite warm, don't know. I would like to go back, and it's one of my intentions is to try and do this and be able to do instrumentation, take a pyrometer where I can get accurate readings on just exactly how hot these fires are.
How difficult was it to get access to this? I mean, were they wary of you? There you are taking pictures of this stuff. I would think that there would be some concern on their part about what you're going to do with the info.
We had an intermediary, and as I say, and our guide was well known to them, and over a lot of time. Now, they are also practitioners. Victoria thought that maybe Noah, who was our main guide, was actually a voodoo priest. As I mentioned before, he has a strong Christian background and a personal relationship with God and his view. But he can integrate these things and has, you know, over time demonstrated to them that hopefully the people that he brings are overall friendly.
We talked briefly about good and evil and the use of voodoo for good or evil. Is there do they have an aversion of evil spirits? Do they have people who get possessed?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the last ceremonies that we saw, and they actually invite the spirits in, and you see full up possession. Again, there's some pictures of that on the website. There's some women who went into trance. One of the things I mentioned is there was somebody there with gunpowder, and there was a woman in trance, and they put she was kneeling with her hands on. They put gunpowder in both hands and ignited it with no adverse effects whatsoever. I mean, she didn't even move when it went off.
You mentioned to me, and I'm anxious to hear the story about an animal sacrifice involving a chicken and something that got Victoria, your wife, got involved in. Tell me that story.
Well, they do invoke sacrifices of various kinds. We were at one of the major sacred areas, and Victoria wanted something done. Now, they had told us what you had to do was you make an agreement with the spirits, and that if your wishes are fulfilled, that you will sacrifice certain things. And in most cases, the people are supposed to come back, and they are blood sacrifices. In her case, she opted for a chicken, and to do it before, just assuming that the outcome might be achieved. And sure enough, they went off on a little motor scooter and came back with a chicken. And again, you see, I have the entire thing on video, but where she's up talking to the chicken and blessing it and explaining what's going to happen. And then one of the workers there, I wouldn't call him a voodoo priest, he was an initiate of some kind, just took the machete and slit his throat and puts blood out, because they, in their belief that you have to give up certain things if you're going to get things, and blood sacrifice is in fact one of them. Have not heard, however, I might mention, of human sacrifices, and unfortunately that's one of the things that Hollywood has portrayed. We might get into zombies too, because that is a current hot theme, obviously.
All right, so Victoria wanted something from the priest. Does she keep that a secret, that something, whatever it is?
Yeah, well, I'm not even sure what it was. It was obviously a private thing.
You had something like that too, though, were you?
Some personal outcome that she wished to have happen, and I do know it was in her son's life. And so just asked for it to be done and said, and here's the chicken. Now, you actually buy the chicken. By the way, they do eat it, so it's not like it's totally wasted by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, I was going to say, we Americans sacrifice millions of chickens every week to the God of Colonel Sanders, but we get a little queasy when you talk about cutting up chickens for religious purposes, I think.
Well, that's true, but I think if people knew what happened to the chickens that they eat from any of the chicken places, we probably would become vegetarians.
I remember seeing in the photos of you having some sort of an encounter with an oracle, or described as an oracle, yeah. And that you asked him for something as well. Tell me that part of the story.
Well, we were at a lake that's inhabited by about 30,000 people. What had happened, this goes back to the slave days, and the people were trying to escape from being captured, and so they moved into the lake, and it's fairly shallow, but they built up on stilts. And in there, a soothsayer came out, and I was actually talked into doing it. And same thing, sat down with him and said, you know, he doesn't know what it is. You pay him some small amount of money, I guess it's the equivalent of a dollar or something like that. And he had certain items that he would throw bones out and look at them and come back. And now, in my case, they said, oh, it was very positive and these things are going to happen. I will let you know if it ever does happen.
I know you've had some experiences with psychics around the world and other shamans who've been able to tell you about your things about yourself. Any of these voodoo guys come to any conclusions or tell you things about yourself that they knew that they probably shouldn't be able to know?
Actually, I saw that happen with one of the shamans in Mongolia. You know, that I have hearing problems and normally wear hearing aids, but I found them to be just kind of problematic. And, you know, we were out on horseback and whatnot, so I didn't, for a long period there, several weeks, I just didn't wear them. And damned if we were in with one of the shamans and he calls me over. It wasn't like we'd been talking and you realized I couldn't hear, because I couldn't talk to him anyway because of the language barriers. And he said, oh, you know, here it is. And he literally blows smoke in my ears.
Now, well, I want to pick up the stories about Mongolia when we come back, and the reindeer shamans of Mongolia. Also, a couple of other tidbits about the voodoo priests of Africa.